My name is Gary Butterfield, he, him.
My name is Kay Ross, she, her.
And you're listening to Watch Out for Fireballs. It is a Games Club podcast.
And this week, we are beginning our discussion of Wasteland 3, which was developed by In Exile Entertainment and published by Deep Silver for the PC and consoles in 2020.
And this episode was executive produced by Joey. Big thanks to Joey.
Thank you, Joey.
Yeah. It's the most wonderful time of the year, by which we mean when Christ is reborn.
Have you heard the good news? Have you heard the good news?
We're pivoting.
Hard pivot.
Extremely hard pivot. Actually, it's just winter WRPG. These are long games. Traditionally, we do a big multi-part series on one of these. And this is our winter RPG for this year. It's meaty.
It is. It is a very meaty game. This first episode is going to be mostly the mechanics and generalities. There's a lot to this. This is a very crunchy game. Mm-hmm. And then the next two episodes are going to go in depth on the story and quests and such.
Yes. Wasteland, the bare bones, we're going to get into more of the tone and kind of what differentiates it from Fallout and its origins a little bit later. But this takes place in America. It's several generations after a nuclear apocalypse. You are a group of Arizona Rangers sent to Colorado to do work for a ruler called the Patriarch. And you're doing this in exchange for aid for the people back home.
Yes, the people of Arizona, where I believe the first two games take place, Arizona and California, they're in a bad way, what with the apocalypse and all.
Yeah, the Arizona Rangers.
Yeah, yeah. Kind of a remnant of the U.S. Army. And this Patriarch guy at least says that he's got stuff to send us if we can help him out with three little things, which are his kids.
Mm-hmm. He's got three shitty kids. We've all been there.
Mm-hmm.
And he's hiring an extra military group to hunt them down. Also, we've all been there.
Yeah.
So it's very relatable content.
Rite of passage.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. Yeah, this is a top-down perspective RPG. You explore the world in real time in 3D, and then the combat turns into a turn-based tactical thing, a little bit like Shadowrun, which we've covered, or like XCOM.
Yeah.
It has a lot in common to XCOM to me. Yeah. Like a grid-based tactical combat.
Yes.
For this.
And that is the thing that I think distinguishes this from similar RPGs is the way that it really leans into that, not like to like under rail, kind of degrees, but this is very concerned with intricate and long combat scenes.
Yes, this is a mechanics first game, I would say. There is story and exploration, all these other things. We'll talk about that stuff and tone that there is something to. You know, if mm-hmm. you're looking for it, this is kind of a divergent line from Fallout.
Yeah.
That's kind of what this feels like. So it's kind of like if Fallout 1 and 2 kind of continued along that path.
Yes.
A little bit. And especially when you compare this to something like Fallout 4, this is like a working class Fallout.
Yeah.
Everything's a little bit more like gas powered and scungy.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's like space trucker kind of, but on Earth.
Yeah, much more kind of clutched together.
Yeah, like a Western.
Yeah.
Like a clutched together Western, kind mm-hmm. of. Yeah.
Yeah. So when you're in a town or a dungeon, you order your group around, you move your little men across the board to poke at things, and some things are going to require checks. Something that is nice about this is that the checks are fixed. If you have the necessary skill, to disarm that bomb or open up that lock, it just succeeds. Yep. Something about this game just in general is everything is communicated very clearly to you. Like, there's a certain amount of certainty that it gives you, for everything up to, but not including like chance to hit. Right.
Yes. Yeah. It's very little hidden information, mm-hmm. In a good way. Those roles suck. They encourage safe scumming to get mm-hmm. past them. This is basically what New Vegas did as well.
Yeah.
Moving from Fallout 3. There are also minor MSIM elements. You can brute force some things. Mm-hmm. If you see a door and you can't unlock it, you can shoot it. Mm-hmm. Because of course you can. If you see a trap and you can't disarm it, you can shoot it. And mm-hmm. The mine will be set off.
Yeah.
They don't generally do that kind of shit. Another little bit of this is that for the most part, a huge difference with this and some of its contemporaries and its sequel or previous game, if I remember, is you can initiate combat in this. If you know somebody is just, we're going to fucking kill this guy, mm-hmm. you don't have to wait for him to do his villain speech and get the drop on you. Mm-hmm. Huge.
Yeah.
There's these little nods to actually being in the world and being able to be, make the choices that you would make if you were playing at the table.
This has been the case for things like, I remember Tyranny having a degree of this. Mm-hmm. I think that Torment Tides of Numenera had it as well. I think this is the best implementation of that because it does give you such a huge advantage and it kind of accounts for it. It is written to be reactive to, you taking the initiative and shooting first, right?
Yes. Yeah, and it's all in service of generally you're playing as this character and deciding how you want to shape this land. You're not being told a story about this land.
Right.
The quality of life stuff is huge. There's a bunch of it.
Oh my God.
One of the things is if you click on something and it has a check, the best party member will do it. Mm-hmm. So you don't have to select the person with lockpicking and remember who has lockpicking. You just click on the door and whoever's lockpicking says, I'm up.
Yeah.
Same thing in dialogue.
Yeah, if anybody in your party has the skill necessary to pass a check, that option is available to you. You do not have to do like a Baldur's Gate style, have your front man, go ahead. That's good in Baldur's Gate because other people in your party can do things at the same time. That's incredibly mm-hmm. breakable in Baldur's Gate 3. Here, though, it is nice that you do not have to do kind of the level of micromanaging. It's a little bit like in the exploration. It's a little bit blobbery because your party, you're designing it as if it's one big character.
Yeah, it really encourages specialization among your characters.
Yeah.
There are times where it is advantageous to split up your party, mm-hmm. Specifically like the stealth system, which we'll talk about.
Yeah.
But it doesn't happen that often. Mm-hmm. You can though, it's viable. Like when I say it doesn't happen that often, I really mean I didn't use it that much.
Yeah.
But sneaking into, seeing an encounter, you have a lot of opportunities to change how you approach it. You can mm-hmm. get the drop. You can also sneak somebody in and like fuck with their turrets.
Yeah.
Things like that. Like that is a build that is available. You can easily switch between selecting your entire group and just one person.
Yeah. There's something very funny. There's at least one point where that is used against you. Did you get the encounter at the base where a guy shows up and says, oh no, me and my wife, some raiders slapped bombs on us. And if we get too close to each other, we're going to explode. You can pass a perception check to see that it's a bunch of like paper tubes. But what they want you to do is like, oh, you need to disarm both of these at the same time. So you send somebody
over to
the
other party
that splits it up. Like I fell for it. I saw the tubes. I was like, I want to see what this is. It's totally an ambush. I didn't know what their angle was.
It's pretty great. It's cool when enemies use tactics against you.
Yes.
Does not happen that often in games.
Yeah. The quests in this game are huge. Mm-hmm. And that is not just the main quests. Like those are like envelope quests that contain other quests, and side quests are basically at the same scale as main quests. This took me a little bit to get used to. Like the only thing that differentiates them is whether or not you need to do them to finish the story.
Yeah. There aren't that many. So don't imagine there are still minor quests, mm-hmm. but don't imagine every minor quest has been spun out to the size of a major quest.
Yeah.
There are little tasks you do for people around town that influence, the reputation system, give XP and such. These aren't tracked and they are not huge.
Right.
So it's kind of like there are the three big quests that contain container quests and then a few other big major side quests to do. Your choices in this matter. It's a WRPG. You progress the story, and this is going to determine how the story shakes out.
Yeah.
There is a question at the heart of this game, which is, it's an old one, but it's an interesting treatment of it. You know, with the world as it is, do we need somebody like the patriarch? Or is it, can we tolerate injustice for the sake of future justice down the road? Like, or do we tolerate injustice in exchange for the greater good? You know, for general stability or safety.
Yeah.
You know, or do we want to unseat him? Do we think that we can do better and we're willing to sacrifice, you know, for our principles?
Yeah. If we decide to unseat him, how good are we going to be at doing that?
Yeah.
You can really lead an ineffective revolution in this.
Yeah. There's a golden ending to this. This gets into stuff we're going to talk about in a couple of weeks, but the golden ending to this is really hard to get.
Yeah.
It's a really, really small percentage of players have got it. And you have to do a lot of counterintuitive things. Mm-hmm. That's part of the thesis statement.
Yeah.
One of the things about this game that I think is a your mileage may vary thing is it is pretty cynical.
Yeah.
You were kind of, regardless of what you do, people are going to suffer. That's the kind of world they're trying to make for you. Your choice in this is not necessarily getting a good ending for all of your little friends who live in the computer. It's determining where your character's values are, and no values are perfect.
Right.
Through this. There's good arguments for both sides of most conflicts.
Yeah.
In this.
And there are some things that seem to be very good and would line up with your values that the game just does not reward you for taking.
Yeah.
Specifically, the way that you handle Wastelander refugees is a big deal in this.
In a way that I think is realistic. You know, I like it. It's not, you know, do you want to put your points into the good bucket or bad bucket? It's, this will have consequences. The people who are arguing against this thing do kind of have a point. Like, the people who are arguing for it also have a point. You know, fuck me, I guess. Like, you can't please everyone.
Yeah.
You know, there's a level of kind of realism in it that I like.
Yeah.
It's not really realism, but closer to how choices feel in real life, I guess.
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, insofar as like the refugee stuff, it's like modeling, well, values are expensive.
Yeah,
right?
Exactly.
Like, this is, yeah, getting this now is going to, prioritizing this is going to cut off things later on in a way that can feel especially punitive, or if you, you know, belabor a way of looking at it, it feels regressive. But it is, you know, kind of building and enforcing a system of those consequences.
Yeah. That's, you know, Gary Knipp. I love, you know, wanting something practically, but not wanting it morally.
Yeah.
I think is a cool thing video games are able to do, you know, because the practical effects are play, you feel them, they're ludic. You know, even outside of narrative, like this does the classic, you get a big reward for doing something immoral. And rather than having that ultimately fuck you up, it usually works out for you.
Yeah.
You know, you just, can you live with the choice? Because you'll get something cool.
Yeah.
But, you know, because that's how kind of how the world works, and definitely how it works in the future here.
Yeah.
In-depth reputation system in this.
Yeah.
So there are these different factions, and you eventually make a final decision about the patriarch. The first time I played this, my canonical playthrough, I sided against the patriarch. I chose my principles. This time I chose the patriarch. And we'll kind of talk about how that changes when we get to the ending.
Yeah, we're going to have very different endings on this. Yeah. And it's not just that one choice. It's like, who have you won over? Like, who likes you and will have your back should this come to a major conflict? But there are also things like, well, how did you resolve this one side quest that will determine whether or not whoever's in charge here is going to have the resources that they need.
Yeah.
And, you know, there are particular NPCs that you can make a decision to keep around or to please or to send away that will also affect the way things go.
A lot of strange bedfellows.
Yes, very much so. And I like how all of that is modeled. It's really intricate. And the reputation goes down to like simple stuff too. Like, you're walking through the streets and people will cheer you. If your fame is high and if your reputation is good, you can also just like some dialogue checks require not just a skill, but like reputation. It's like, hey, are you a big enough kiss ass for this? But also, it does this faction generally like you? Kind of like, do they know you? Yeah.
There's a world map. Mm-hmm. You have a huge truck tank battle wagon called the Kodiak. You have this in the notes. You do move slow. You eventually can move faster, but they gate that too late.
Yep.
And it's too zoomed in.
Oh,
and
yeah.
You can't scroll off the screen. Mm-hmm. So it does feel really slow. Things are actually pretty close together.
Yeah.
In this, so it doesn't actually take that long in terms of time. It just feels like it does.
Yeah.
And it does for most of the game. Eventually, you do get a speed up. Mm-hmm. And something the game does not communicate to you very well, but if you're going to play this, save you tons of time, you can tow yourself back to base. You can faster. There isn't fast travel outward. There's fast travel inward.
Yes.
So you can go back to your home base. You're going to need to go back to your home base a lot. I wish I had figured this out. I didn't figure it out at all in my first playthrough, mm-hmm. and figured it out about 3/4 the way through my second.
So,
like I lost, several, probably like an hour mm-hmm. in real life, which is crazy. That could have been saved by a tooltip.
Schlepping back home to really let you know that you can tow back.
Yeah.
Yeah. There are also like encounter nodes, like there'll be little shops or like there'll be like a bunker that you can try to get into. Like those just kind of pop up like little pieces on a board game, mm-hmm. And there are random encounters on the map too. Just you move a certain distance and then you get a like, oh, you spot this group of monsters or something doesn't seem right. Do you want to proceed cautiously or do you want to proceed as normal? You can avoid these with skill checks. Like if you have a high survival, like your characters can navigate around it, get away. Other skill checks will give you an advantage on the battle mm-hmm. when you get in. You don't really want to avoid battles in this. Is kind of the way that I am playing it, because like a big random battle, if you have the patience for it on the way between other big battles, you get very meaningful level ups off of that.
Yeah. It's random encounters are not frequent. Mm-hmm. It is hard to grind in this game. You would do it through random encounters, but they don't show up that often.
Yeah.
And if you don't like battles, like you're playing the wrong game, mm-hmm. right? Like if you don't, this feels a lot like XCOM most of its runtime.
Yeah.
If you don't want to play those tactical battles, then that's what it is. You mm-hmm. know, so like I would get sick of random encounters at a certain point. Like I've already fought this monster before once I was in the glide to the end game, but I played the first mm-hmm. part of it the same way.
Yeah.
I want that loot. I want the mm-hmm. I want those monsters. I want to see these little weird unique maps. Mm-hmm. The battle maps are all pretty interesting.
Yeah. Little like wasted out towns or bits of woods.
Not necessarily interesting like theme wise, interesting topography wise.
Yes.
Like there's cover and elevation and like all the things you want to make mm-hmm. an encounter interesting.
Yeah. Like there's little like makeshift outposts and stuff that you can take apart.
Yeah. Pretty fun. World map progress, there are radiation clouds that you'll take 1 point of damage, like you're standing in the sun. Mm-hmm. Whenever you're in, you have to upgrade your Kodiak before you can explore further. This is just a way of making sure you don't go to meat walls.
Yeah.
And really end game content really, early on. It's weird. There are three levels of it. It's not, it feels like it's going to be a bigger thing than it is. Mm-hmm. It's just kind of a check.
Yeah.
To stop you from sneaking into, Navarro base and getting power armor right when you start.
Yeah. So let's talk about the combat, because when you're in exploration mode and you're just moving around the map, you have a few different ways. Combat's going to start when a group spots you, or you get a dialogue encounter that goes bad, or if you just decide I'm going to shoot first, and array my guys and, have my sniper, shoot an exploding barrel or something like that.
Yeah. My sniper started most of the combats in this.
Yeah.
Something I really like is that if you do get a dialogue thing, if you do get caught and you're talking to them, if you don't think you can talk them down, and usually you can see it from a stat check, mm-hmm. if you choose the dialogue option that is attack, mm-hmm. You will get initiative.
Yes.
Your characters will all go first. Since I did that for most of the time, the initiative stat is not, or the initiative value is not very good mm-hmm. in this, because I almost always went first and then we just took turns. It can be devastating if you don't.
Oh God. Yeah.
There are end game battles that took me a couple tries because I could not get the drop on the people. It's not that hard of a game, but not being able to get the drop once you're used to it, the game really encourages you to do that.
Yeah. I am so much more trigger happy in this game than I am in pretty much any other.
Yeah. Life is cheap. So your characters can have initiative. They can go first. It'll kind of just roll normal initiative if you can do a regular fight.
Yeah.
Here. And that is tied to the sneaky shit skill is one of the things it's tied to, which is also how you stealth around, which we'll talk about in a bit.
Yes. Yeah. So you can ambush and fire first, which is nice. You separate your party. This was not immediately intuitive to me, how you do this. I couldn't find it initially. So I was like, yeah. I guess I'm just rolling up with all my guys clustered. If you can send people off to the side, even the ones who cannot sneak very well, you can kind of solid snake through their red circle, through their detection circle, just fine to get them where they need to go. And you can start with a huge advantage or take away the enemy's comparative advantage for you.
It's part of the transparent information system in this, the stealth. So enemies will just show a red detection radius. There's a red circle. They can see you if you're in there. Mm-hmm. And you're not immediately seen. A timer starts.
Yeah.
So you can sneak kind of in their periphery, no problem. Anyone can do that. But if you have a higher sneaky shit skill, the timer gets longer.
Yeah.
So if there's a character who it is advantageous to put deep in it, you know, like if you have a melee character who's really powerful, you want to get them in the shit, leveling stealth is not a bad idea. And you can put them right behind enemy lines, sneaking through on the way if you'd like to.
Melee is really powerful. Like you get two guys at the start, like two people that you design. I just decided one of my main two was going to be a melee guy. And boy, Gary, is it paying off.
Yeah. Melee is sick in this. Almost everything is viable. Yeah. Weirdly, the worst thing is shotguns.
Yeah.
Until the end, you can eventually make a shotgun build. There's not, this is kind of a general thing, but there aren't a lot of like trap skills.
Yeah.
In this, for the most part, everything's useful. Mm-hmm. Having a well-rounded party is really good, but not of well-rounded individuals. A well-rounded party of specialists, except for shotgun.
Right. But shotgun is on the same skill, on the same skill tree as the pistols, and pistols are really good.
And pistols are great. You know, you can, they really simplified the weapon system since the Wasteland 2.
Yeah.
You have a 6-member party in this. They do this in a way I really like. You have your two main characters you start out with, you get to create two, and then you can have two, you have to have two story companions.
Yes.
In this. This gives you a lot of party craft in this. Being able to design from the ground up for, you know, 2/3 of your party allows you to choose the extra characters in your party based on the holes you have. And then you can also, you know, respec if you need to.
Yes.
This is a game about crafting your team of six to be effective.
Yeah. Like a little bit of spreadsheet work at the start to just say, what are all the available skills, and then allocate them to the, you know, to the different people, and just make sure that everything is covered will pay dividends for you. You know, you get plenty of skill points, but not enough to, you know, be very good at more than 3 or 4 things on an individual character.
Yeah. Until like the end game.
Yeah.
You know, you might eventually get to the point where you're basically 4 skills is what you're going to top out at. You know, for things. But again, the systems are designed to make that work.
Yes. So you get those 6 people. You can also have animal companions on most of these. You don't control the animal companions. They get their own little turn. It is very hard to keep your animal companions alive. RIP to Major Tomcat.
Yeah, Major Tomcat died for me too. You get Annapals, you know, through this. You also can get just regular NPCs.
The provost. I have a man in a suit who only speaks Latin. He was a really good shot.
Do you have Party Bot?
No, I didn't. Okay. I didn't take things. I didn't make choices that would give me a Party Bot.
And you're probably getting a sense of the tone just as the stuff leaks through. We'll talk about that on its own. But one of the things I really love when we talk about the ease of use stuff is all of the NPC things act at the same time.
Yeah, yeah.
You're not watching a bunch of little computer guys take a turn. They just go do their thing.
Yeah.
It's great. Like, it takes nothing. And everyone can have an animal companion. This is tied to a skill. Mm-hmm. And they give you a passive buff.
Yeah.
So giving everyone animal handling 1 means they can have a cat come along with them and get whatever passive buff that comes with. You know, more powerful animals require more animal skill. But you can have everyone do it and just give everyone a buff and have 6 little, you know, meat bags. You know, kind of sad. Like, I trained this moose to go take these hits, but better moose than me, as so they say.
Yeah. They say it all the time. My mom has that crocheted onto a pillow.
Yeah. I saw it in an Airbnb.
It is really funny when you have a bunch of them and it is just a swarm of animals. Yeah.
It's just the end of Pee-wee.
Yep.
You just send in the Pee-wee brigade. I found an abandoned Petco. You guys are fucked.
Like, get them, boys.
Yeah.
Send them all in at once. You know, led by my two-headed goat.
Yeah. A two-headed goat, a cat, a moose, like, you know, a badger, like just a random, a party bot and a man in a suit who only speaks Latin all immediately rush the enemy. Like,
yeah, we'll talk about that. I mean, just it's a really, really goofy game.
Super goofy. Each side takes a turn, and this is an AP-based system. Mm-hmm. You have a certain amount of AP you can spend on movement and actions. An interesting thing that can happen is your luck stat, which ordinarily does crits. In this game, intelligence is for crits.
Mm-hmm.
Here, luck does XP bonuses,
yeah,
and then a chance to get a lucky action. So when you do anything, you make a roll, and if you crit that action is free and it doesn't use up action points.
Mm-hmm.
It's obviously huge.
Yeah. I never do anything in a luck stat in an RPG. Like, that is just mm-hmm. like, that's for later. If I have any spare points, I'm finding myself upgrading luck a lot, specifically because of how powerful that is.
It's real good.
Yeah. You can move and attack in whatever order you like, and you can also hop around between party members during a turn. It does not force you Final Fantasy Tactics style to commit every character, so you can interleave them, which is nice. And it does the Shadowrun thing of showing you how far you can move and still get an attack in.
Not only that, it shows whether other people can see you. It shows the sight lines
mm-hmm.
at the wherever you're hovering your cursor. So if your character can move six spaces and still shoot, when you hover your cursor over that space, it will mm-hmm. show the sight lines to the enemy and from the enemy.
Yes.
If you had done it. It's a CRPG about perfect information as close as we've gotten.
Yeah.
While still having die rolls to attack.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It's great. Use. I love it.
Yeah. It just really, really feels like it should be an industry standard. I don't know if this is anywhere else in here in the mm-hmm. notes, but just another thing. When you loot everything on the battlefield.
Oh, it's so good. Yeah.
It's so good. Like, you're not walking around just like scavenging corpses.
Yeah.
You just loot one guy and it just goes through an order.
Yeah.
Click, 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 click. Just get everything and just, we're not going to try to waste your time.
Battlefields can be really big. Sometimes you have to like loot one side and then the other, like they won't be grouped up. But yeah, not needing to hunt around for interactable bodies is such a huge deal. I didn't have that in a note. I'm glad you brought it
up. It's a rare thing. Like, a lot of the things this game does, this is not in my, you know, Hall of Valhalla CRPG because there are some tonal things that I'm like less into.
Mm-hmm.
But in terms of not wasting your time, this is kind of an exemplar.
Yeah.
It really is not interested in that,
mm-hmm.
Which I think is great.
Yes. There's a cover system in this, like in Shadowrun and XCOM, high cover and low cover. Line of sight is really rigorously tracked, like we said.
Yes.
It is honored. People can be blocked from line of sight. Also, even if somebody isn't in cover and there's a big thing between you and them, your bullet will probably hit the thing between you and them.
Yeah. Right. It'll show the little sight line hitting it.
Yeah.
You know, the little line. It's also a thing where, because cover is so important, this is a game primarily, you know, melee is viable, but you're mostly using guns. Mm-hmm. You do not want to be out of cover without having blockage.
Right.
Ending a character just kind of the middle of things is a bad idea, even mm-hmm. on like normal difficulty.
Yeah.
You can destroy cover. If somebody is in cover, you know, which really, really impacts your chance to hit, you can destroy it with explosives or shotguns.
Mm-hmm.
So you can take that away.
That is one of the good things about shotguns.
Yes.
You know, shotguns are like, they shoot in a cone and you can see, like, it'll highlight in red everybody that they're going to hit. That area of effect is good against cover. One of the ways you make shotguns good, and I know this because my primary character, it is small arms, you get a perk that will increase the amount of damage done based on the number of people who are in the cone.
Yeah. That's what makes shotguns viable. It's pretty late in the tech tree.
Yeah.
After that, it's just damage. Like, mm-hmm. you don't find a good one for a long time.
Yeah.
Your characters have two active weapons. And the game does keep track of ammo. You can see how much is in your clip and how much is in your inventory. You can run out of ammo and have to reload. It's something in the matrix of balancing weapons. So a weapon can be really good, but it's a single shot. So you have to factor in reloading after every shot.
Mm-hmm. Reloading takes AP. I think it's as much as it takes to attack.
It's different per gun.
Yes. Okay. Yeah.
So it's sometimes it's a lot less. If it was the same amount for sniper rifles, it'd be ridiculous.
Yeah,
it's less, but it's different. It's a balancing factor.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And this is, man, I can't remember if, I know Shadowrun doesn't do this. XCOM definitely doesn't do this. This is unique among the tactical RPGs insofar as like you can just run out of ammo, like in, not in your campaign, but like you need to go find and buy more or make more in order to keep going. That is a big part of the resource curve early on.
They make it, being able to make it basically anytime makes it so you're not usually screwed, but it's not the most efficient use of your scrap of your crafting stuff.
Yeah.
The other thing is because your party is not going to use every classification of weapon, you don't have to hoard everything. So like, you know, I don't have a flamethrower guy. I'm going to sell my flamethrower fuel and get like a good amount of money, you know, for it here. But it is something you have to keep in mind. You know, do I don't know how additive it is. I don't know how additive the crafting stuff is. Generally, we'll talk about that.
Yeah.
Your characters have certain skills or they have a skill that is tied to their weapon. These don't take extra AP, but they have a cooldown. That you will use. And these vary a lot. So this can be, you know, if you're hacking a robot that does take AP usually, but you have a thing, you know, oh, I can use this once every three turns. It does this neat thing. This is all part of the skill tree, which we'll talk about with character kind of upgrades.
Yes. Use these special abilities. They're kind of hidden, like they're hidden under a little, you know, kind of like sub interface thing. Remember that they're there and use them because like this is where you get some skills that let you like shred armor and things like that.
Big MVP is the leadership skill that gives everyone extra AP.
Yes.
Except for your leader.
Yeah.
You have a limit break in this.
This is wild.
The strike meter. As you do normal attacks, it builds up. When this is full, you get a specific precision attack that has advantages. When you have a gun that can be aimed, if you have a shotgun or flamethrower, it just gives you a wider swath with more damage. If you have a gun that can be aimed, you get to aim at a specific part of the enemy, and these can't miss. I mean, they can always miss on a one, right? So they have 95% chance to hit. This is great. This, you can save these, you can bank them, but you don't then gain more. So you're kind of doing a constant risk reward thing, whether you want to be able to start this next encounter strong, you know, or use it to bypass cover. You know, I would like this guy's a problem. He's going to throw grenades at me. I need to snipe him in the head. And he's behind cover. I need to not miss him. So I'm going to save my sniper's, you know, precision hit. For this.
This is where melee characters get really good with these strike meters. You want to spec them so that your strike meter fills up quickly. Like this gets you like ridiculous AoEs and stun and a bunch of like damage over time shit as well.
Because it's a good video game, there's turn denial.
Yes.
As a thing. the grenades are a big deal and deployables. So turrets and mechs, things you can throw out there. Everyone, these are tend to be tied to skills as well. Everyone can throw a grenade, but the turrets and mechs, you have to have the tech skill. Everyone has a shared inventory, but you have to assign it to a quick slot. It makes getting an extra quick slot very valuable because healing also goes in those. Or utility items. If you want something that's going to buff you, if you want a grenade, if you want to deploy a bot, or if you want to heal, that's going to take one of your two slots.
That's where your drugs
until you
go.
You eventually get three.
You want to get those. In order to be able to use that. Again, the shared inventory is such a huge quality of life thing. I love not needing to manage who is carrying what. It'd
be awful.
It'd be
really annoying. Armor's big.
Oh my God, this is so huge. This creates a bit of an order of operations thing. You do not want to be attacking an enemy while they have armor up.
You will lose a lot of your damage. You have abilities that can break armor. Armor is also important for you. This is a big change from Wasteland 2. They actually made it really viable, like whereas it's kind of not important in Wasteland 2. But you have different weapons with different amounts of penetration. If it's lower than an enemy armor rating, the attack will not do very much damage. But if you have high penetration, you can do more damage, or if you shred the armor using an ability or an item.
This is where the, you know, using the precision shot targeted at the body or armor plates on robots and stuff is definitely a way to go. I pretty much always save my precision shots for that. So one character can soften up and then everybody else can focus them down and so on in turn.
Grenades also bypass armor, and obviously they're AOE. They're really valuable in this. There's a nice variety of grenades, like utility grenades, damage over time grenades. explosive, etc.
Yeah. On this. Yeah. And elemental damage bypasses it as well, although elemental stuff tends to do less overall damage in exchange for that.
There are weaknesses. There are enemies that are weak to different kinds of elements and stuff like that. There's not a hover over like there is in Baldur's Gate 3.
Yeah.
So it's hard to tell, you know, without looking up a wiki.
Mm-hmm. And a lot of the elemental stuff.
Bestiary, but I don't know.
That's possible.
In the menu.
Yeah. And a lot of the elemental damage is like, okay, you have a flamethrower, there's specific grenades, or there's just like a whole skill called Weird Science, which lets you use like high tech, space age fantasy shit.
You can also respec weapons using weapon modding.
Yes.
Like if I have the sniper rifle I really like, and I would like it to do cold damage, and it will tell you when you're going to mod it, those changes, like, oh, minus this much damage to robots plus this much damage to humans. Mm-hmm. In the individual scene, it's hard to see that.
Yeah.
Or like they don't surface that.
Yes. There's nowhere else to put this, but when we're talking about dealing damage to enemies, very little does more damage than your Kodiak tank truck thing.
Yes.
Some scenes you could just have this, like if you're outdoors, this is most of the random encounters that you get out, in the world. It can move, but also it has an AI turret on the top of it that you can just command around like a party member. And it does ridiculous damage and can be upgraded.
It's sick. This is for random encounters and also a lot of climactic battles.
Mm-hmm.
I love this. It's really useful. It's very powerful. You can get a wide variety of utility items on it.
Yeah.
So you can have like a thing that makes it shoot caltrops, you know, to an area. And you can use it as cover. It's hard cover. So like, it's just very useful.
Yeah.
You know, in exchange, it doesn't move very fast, but it's really, really cool when you have this on your side.
Yeah.
Very empowering.
The other thing that kind of like can fuck this up is if you're playing with friendly fire on, even if friendly fire is off, sometimes you'll, you know, snag your own guys. The cannon on this thing just hits a wide space.
Yeah.
And so you need to manage. I am not playing with friendly fire. I can see it adding another really interesting layer to the tactical combat.
It's a different matrix thing because if you eventually can get a bunch of different weapons for it. And you can get single shot ones. So you don't have to worry about collateral damage, but then you're not being able to get clustered up enemies.
Yeah, yeah.
For that. One of my favorite features in this is a lot of times in games with AP systems, you have an odd amount left over.
Yeah.
And that feels bad.
Mm-hmm.
They give you an option for this.
Yes.
If you have enough to shoot, you can do an overwatch. It's called ambush in this. But you can also do defend, which will make the AP raise your evasion. For this, or prepare and carry up to 2 AP into the next turn.
Yes.
So you can save up. You know, if a character has to make an approach, you're not just wasting that turn. The next turn will be more powerful if you have to waste most of a turn getting into the position.
Yeah. And there are skills that make your ambushes more powerful, right? Like the sniper, you know, for the sniper skill, it's limited because it only affects sniper rifles. There are a few different kinds of them, but at the top of that, like at level 10, the perk that you can get means you can basically overwatch as many times in a turn as you have ammo loaded up.
Yeah. Like set up a sniper nest, for a defensive place. I really like this feature.
Yeah.
Party members do go down in this, and if they do, you have a couple of turns to revive them. Think Final Fantasy Tactics.
Mm-hmm.
It takes AP to bring them back. Revived party members come back with very little health, 3 AP, which is exactly enough to heal or get into cover. Yep. They're not going to be useful right away. And they come back with an injury. These are basically debuffs. They're randomized. You have to use a special item to get rid of them.
Mm-hmm.
One ease of use thing I would port into this game is an ability to de-injure all.
Yeah.
You know, with a button, just use as much of my stuff as you need to, but just do an injury kit on everybody.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this is kind of a pain. There's also a weird thing in this where one of the conditions you can get from weapons is bleeding.
Yeah.
And it doesn't happen very often, but there is an item that you get to stop bleeding that is exactly as common as injury kits would happen all the time.
Yeah.
There's a suture kit. And by the end, I'm just sitting around with, I don't know, like a cat's cradle, a huge spider web worth of suture kits.
I need to be able to dismantle these suture kits.
Yeah, I need to be able to harvest useful string from this because there's nothing I can do with it. Like, it's real weird. I think at one point bleeding was a bigger deal.
I noticed that as well. I was like, I don't need this many. And also it's annoying because you've got a, you can only heal with the, if you're meta character, you need to swap out like the, on your quick bar injury kits for suture kits and back and forth.
A little bit
fiddly in a game that otherwise gets high marks for quality of life stuff.
Yeah. It's a minor demerit, I would say.
Yeah. Kind of along with injuries, you can get mutations. These act like debuffs most of the time. There are some that are beneficial. So like, I think my sniper has a third eye that increases rate to hit just randomly. I ended up getting that by exposure to radiation or mutated enemies. This is a boon. However, you can get multiple mutations at once. And if you need to remove a very bad one, you'll get rid of your good ones all with it as well. Yeah.
Yeah. There's probably a min-maxing way to, hunt for different mutations. I've never done that. Mm-hmm. You gain XP as you do things in this. You level up. Each level gives you an attribute point to spend, some skill points to spend, and every other level you get a perk. For this. Attributes work how you'd expect. They're mostly operative in combat, but they do affect other things through this. So like things like your sneaky shit, really, that's a skill, but things like your initiative for when you're getting into combat, things like that.
Yeah. That's your speed stat that affects that, in addition to like how far you can move how much AP turns into how many squares of movement in combat.
But there are some things that are not necessarily intuitive to most games. As we mentioned, intelligence is critical hits rather than luck. Crits are really powerful in this.
Oh, yeah.
Charisma is the effectiveness of the leadership skill and also XP bonuses.
Yes.
So giving yourself more charisma, instead of it being a companion limit, you'll level up faster.
Which is almost exactly what intelligence does in other games.
Yeah. They switched it. It's weird.
Yeah.
What they're trying to do is not make a dump stat, I feel like.
Yeah.
And generally are successful at this. Strength affects your HP, but it also affects what things you can equip.
Yes.
So if you have a character who is never going to get in the thick of it, so you don't want them to have high HP, they might have a heavy gun they want to use. So you might have to put some points into that.
Yes. Yeah. So you end up having to be a little bit rounded. There's nothing that you can fly with as just a, just a one. But yeah, you want to specialize. Again, it is an unusually large party.
Yeah. Generally, I prioritize chance to hit and action points.
Yes.
Initially.
Mm-hmm.
So, and then leadership, these are tied to perks, which we'll talk about. They have levels. Mm-hmm. You might need this much stat to get this perk.
Yeah.
I would put, points into, that's the skills. Never mind.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. I don't need it. Yeah. This is just a separate. Yeah.
And so, it's a separate thing that mostly has an impact on derived stats, not things that you can do. The skills, those affect the things that you can do. And stats will, affect how some of this goes, but they're broken up into different categories. Everybody's going to want to have a combat skill. Given how combat focused the game is, these are just different weapon types, plus explosives and things like that. Then exploration skills make sense. This is like lockpicking. They call hacking nerd stuff, which is useful at terminals, but also for hijacking turrets and robots and stuff, which is good. You have your general skills like survival, animal companionship, and then social skills. There are fewer of these than you normally would expect. You have like hard ass, kiss ass, and then leadership.
And then barter.
Yes.
Goes in here as well.
Barter is so important.
Barter actually matters because you want a good economy in this game. One of the exploration skills is called Toaster Repair. This is a series running joke. If you take this, there's a big Easter egg at the end of the game that you can do if you do this the entire game. I never done that. But this is better treasure chests.
Yes.
Areas will have a toaster that is malfunctioning. And if you have the toaster repair skill, you will get something out of it. These tend to be really high value items or very rare items.
Yeah.
High level treasure chest.
Yes.
But it's a series inside joke way back from Wasteland 1.
And the joke is, how do they fit so much stuff in there? I've pulled very improbable things out of it.
Yeah. And the original, you had all these military skills in Wasteland 1, and then you also had toaster repair, and it felt like just a silly non sequitur, but then it ended up being really useful.
Yes. Yeah. You get those perk skills every other level. And everybody has kind of a set of general perks that they can access, like directly improve your HP or your evasion. Every other perk is associated with a skill. It's like a line, and these unlock at higher skill levels on these. Very important and also very kind. They're not cumulative. There is no, like, you need to buy the skill level one perk in order to get the skill level four perk. This is not, it's not actually a tree or anything.
No, it's a series of options, just a pile for each skill. One thing that I think is a minor demerit in this is that there are skills that are really powerful and good. I got those, halfway through the game, and then was just kind of taking stuff. I don't think these, with a couple of exceptions, are that exciting, as perks. Like, some of them are really cool. You can see how they're cool, but there are ones that just don't feel good to me. It's like, I wish this was more developed.
It's like on Big Guns, you get one that's like, you get an advantage if you use a flamethrower on an enemy who is hiding inside of a vehicle. I am 30 hours into this game right now. Have not beat it yet. I have not run into that at all. That has not been a factor.
It's a cool idea, but there's evidence of maybe the game had been different.
Yes.
At some point. Here. So I'd like those to be more exciting.
The ones that are going to be useful are very clear. Like barter, like at level 7, you would get an antique appraiser. And then like there's a small chance. It's like a 1 in 20 chance when you sell a piece of junk. It might be worth 15 times the list price because it's a collectible.
It's 50 times.
50 times. Okay.
Yeah. It's a big chunk.
Yeah.
Which is really good. Like things like that. Like there are useful ones. You just kind of have to call your shots.
Yes.
There aren't that many.
Yeah.
You also will find perks. Out in the world, you generally get these just kind of through the story, or there is a fortune telling machine. There's a Zoltar machine named Tarjan. If you find tokens for that, which is one of the big things you find in toasters, you can put that in the fortune telling machine and either get a rare item or one of these perks.
Yes. Yeah. For the Zoltar machine, it's weird that they don't just call that a Zoltar. There are so many proper brand names in this.
Yeah.
I have no idea how InXile has not been sued to oblivion.
they don't fucking give a shit.
Yeah.
Yeah. Fuck it. We ball.
Yeah. There are also quirks. When you create a character, you can decide if they have a quirk. These have upsides and downsides. They're completely optional, though. I'm running quirkless. There's nothing that I saw that was yes. Thank you. Thank you.
The stickiest deliveries in the history of TV.
Oh God, yeah. Suspect is blankless. Blankless.
Can I just real quick? Because it's hatless is what he says in the thing. Last night at practice, Brian, our drummer, was telling us that his brother had a copy of Nine Inch Nails' Pretty Hate Machine.
Okay.
And it was used, and the person before had blacked out the E on every instance of hate. So the album was Pretty Hat Machine. And that's so good. Like, that's a good name for a record for anybody now. Like, and it sounds like something that would be on a conveyor belt in the Robin Williams vehicle Toys.
Dun, 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 dun.
Yeah. Yeah, I love Pretty Hat Machine so much. I've had it stuck in my head for the last 12 hours. Like, I just keep thinking about Pretty Hat Machine.
Really everybody can have fun with that.
Yeah, everybody can enjoy this. It's a Pretty Hat Machine.
I want to clothe you like an animal. Yeah.
I want to haberdash you like an animal. Like, it's great.
Head with a hat.
Yeah. Love it.
Oh my God.
Yeah. You can respect your characters. This is done at Ranger HQ. This costs money and gets more expensive every time you do it.
Yeah.
Kind of a bummer because money is limited in this game and you really need it. The reason why I think this is a bummer is because there are tooltips that say you want to specialize your characters, but initially, just playing CRPGs, you might try to make a well-rounded character, and that's going to cost you money later.
Yes.
Because you will kind of hobble yourself if you do that.
Yeah. And additionally, like you can respect story characters as well.
Yes.
You know, like Marshall Kwan, you do not need the leadership skill, buddy.
No. Yeah. I brought a leader.
Yeah.
Yeah. Equipment is leveled. So better equipment has higher stat and skill requirements. Use it effectively. You know, so if you do find end game stuff, you can't use it. This is not super tight.
No.
Is one of the things. So yes, there are these requirements, but it doesn't have the feeling of you can only go up one increment at a time. You do have that feeling of jumping the curve and finding something that has what feels like lower requirements than it should.
Yeah.
Specifically, I'm thinking about the single shot rifle you get from the bazaar.
Oh, yeah. The harpoon gun thing.
The harpoon thing that's very powerful. Mm-hmm. Like really cool. It seems like it's going to be bad because it's single shot, but it takes almost no AP to fire.
Yeah.
That has a really low level requirement, even though it's really, really good. So you can find things that jump the curve. It's not too controlling.
Yeah. I love that thing for opening gambits.
It's great.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's really good. Armor and weapons can be modded. These are skills you have to invest in. So these are also level gated. You have to have armor mod 7 to put this mod on.
Mm-hmm.
When you place a mod on a piece of equipment, it can't be removed, but you can place another piece on it and destroy that original one.
Yes. Yeah. You want to do this. Like, this will specialize the equipment, but almost generally always make it better. Even with the trade-offs that you get. You don't want to be precious about allocating these things. I tend to, if I've been carrying a weapon for a long time and I know I'm about to get an upgrade, I'll just be like, okay, when I get another one, I'll use it there. Yeah. I won't invest in this. But generally you want to be churning through these things.
Yeah. Even low level ones are meaningful.
Yeah.
Like extra two hit or extra armor really counts. And those end up being cheap. So even kind of for burner equipment, you can throw one of those on.
Mm-hmm.
There's crafting in this.
Yeah.
Yeah, because it is a bad game, there is crafting. I'm going to really simplify Duck Feed in 2026. I was experimenting with that in Real Itch Hours, and I think that just really gets to the heart of it, you know?
Good games have, blank.
Yeah, good games have, you know, equipment modding. Bad games have crafting.
Mm-hmm.
The crafting system in this is incredibly fucking complex.
Yeah.
There are so many things to craft. You have all-purpose scrap that can be turned into ammo or healing items. And then you have a lot of specialized items. These require additional materials, recipes. Then there are Easter egg items.
Yeah.
That you can find, some of which are actually kind of powerful. Like, they seem like they're just going to be Easter eggs and maybe sell for a good amount. But mm-hmm. they also can be a cool thing you can get by finding random items, some of which are junk.
Yes.
And you have a sell all junk button.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there are things like, for example, there's a hat that is a cardboard box that really increases your stealth.
Yep.
Little Metal Gear reference. To make that, you need junk. So you have to actually pay attention to which junk you have rather than hitting sell all.
Mm-hmm.
That is a bummer.
Yes. Do not like that, because the ability to just sell all of your junk is, you know, necessary. Like, otherwise it is just way too, I don't know. I would rather they just give me money. It's like Christmas. Just give me money.
Yeah, exactly. Just get a gift. Yeah, I don't need this gift card for ammo. This could have been gotten around. Like, it could have omitted those from mm-hmm. sell all if it was useful in a recipe.
Yeah. But there's a whole other category for like random like crafting things, like the like little frames that you use to make mechs. Those are not junk, right?
Yeah. So then they can be used in crafting. So it feels kind of arbitrary. Crafting in the development of this was added a little bit late from this, and you can tell.
Yeah.
In terms of crafting systems, I find this one largely non-obtrusive.
Mm-hmm.
Mostly used it for ammo.
Yeah, ammo and healing items.
Use it for consumables.
Yeah. You just carry, like, the scrap is an all-purpose, like, gray goo that you can decide to turn into whatever resource that you need in a given moment. You can get more scrap by field stripping weapons. It's kind of up to you and based on your stats whether it is better to field strip things or to sell them whole. One of the things that can affect that is there is a skill for weapon modding that makes it so that random mods will pop out of field stripped weapons. If you have that, you generally will come out ahead.
Yeah. If you have somebody who can do what good weapon mods, you're going to want to be field stripping pretty consistently.
Yeah.
That's basically everything that I can think of. Whenever we do one of these, I will remember something in like two episodes from now.
Yep.
And be like, oh, fuck. But that, I think that about covers it for mechanics in this.
It's a really satisfying game to play. You know, I am down with this level of combat. I don't know that I would want it for everything. But like the way that this game prioritizes, the way this game has its priorities sorted is really pleasing to me. And the quality of play stuff.
It's been a while
since
we've done an XCOM.
Yeah.
You know, an XCOM fucking rules.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's great. Adding an RPG framework to that combat rather than a management sim angle is also cool.
Yeah.
Moving on to aesthetics, this is a good-looking game, I agree. By taking place in the winter, it is a permanent nuclear winter up in Colorado, so it's very oppressive. in this, and it is a nice aesthetic.
Yeah.
It is an awesome contrast to post-apocalyptic games, which we get, which is the brown.
The brown. It's all desert.
It's not the brown. Yeah. We've left the brown.
Mm-hmm.
We're now in the white.
Yeah.
You know, not no subtext, no coded messages there. I mean it. It's just snow.
Yes, it is just snow. Looks and feels dangerous. And kind of changes like the narrative around everything. People don't die of thirst. They freeze to death. It's very hostile.
Yeah.
Most of the time you're looking down at kind of these lower detail models of your action figures, moving them around. When you get into a cinematic dialogue, it'll go to the Bethesda angle. This is always startling when it happens because somebody like walks straight at you.
it's the Bethesda angle a little bit, but I think this is specifically trying to do Fallout 1 and 2.
Yeah.
The claymation heads through this. This happens so rarely.
Yeah.
I think it happened like 4 times in the entire game. So it's startling largely because like, that's not what this hell? Is.
Yeah.
Yeah. Music in this game is really good. And there's 2 kinds of music in this. There is a score that's composed by Mary Ramos and had oversight from Mark Morgan, the Fallout and Torment guy. This is really good.
I love the music in this game so much, Gary.
Well, they do. This is a thing that fucking shouldn't work on me. Like I feel weak. Because this works on me is the cargo cult idea of in the future, there are covers of like pop songs and TV theme tunes that have been reinterpreted.
Yeah. We do not know what a Cotter is or why we would welcome him back, but we do have just the sheet music from this John Sebastian song.
Yeah. So let's do an arrangement with our current kind of cowboy trucker aesthetic. Mm-hmm. Like there's never a world in which I thought, everybody Wang Chung tonight would sound sad.
Uh-huh.
But they made one.
Mm-hmm.
Like there's on the radio they'll play the Gilligan's Island theme and it sounds like a sad sea shanty.
Yeah.
It's nuts. And it works on me every time. And I feel like I feel like I'm being conned.
Uh-huh.
And I don't know why. A bunch of big climactic battles take place to this like a really old Bible folk songs,
mm-hmm.
like Bible hymns, and these are all beautiful and good.
Oh my God. It's like, like what if the battle hymn of the Republic interpreted by the Handsome family, like everything run through this theme song to the season 1 of True Detective filter.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. It really works, you know, and a lot of times they're thematic, you know, and they have little nods. Mm-hmm. This has the all-star use of Land of Confusion by Genesis in it that I've seen. I'm really good.
Unlocking the wistfulness inherent in the WKRP in Cincinnati theme song.
Yeah. Well, so many of those 70s TV shows, the songs are fucking sad.
Oh, they're great. Yeah.
Like, Welcome Back, Cotter, sad. Taxi, sad. WKRP in Cincinnati, sad. MASH, sad. Like, in the 70s, our theme song sounded like depressed men.
Uh-huh.
Basically wall to wall.
Yep.
Until the greatest American hero saved us from all that.
Believe
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it is such a... It is, I feel like a cheap date when I recognize something and smile, right?
Yeah.
The, you know, traditional songs and the folk hymns, Bible shit, that I think is more arousing. And the way that they deploy those is really good. Also, just A+ cover of and use of the Monster Mash.
Yes. Yeah. The Monster Mash is great in this. Mm-hmm. Really, really good. Mm-hmm. Ordinarily that I might gall at something like that. Like I liked it in Bioshock Infinite. This uses it way more, but it's contrasted because this is a silly game.
Mm-hmm.
Tone is, if you're listening to this, for me, tone is the biggest thing I had to get over.
Yeah.
In this. And it starts with a goofier foot than it ends with.
Yeah.
And there are stakes. There are real characters in this. There are cool ideas. All the things you want from a CRPG. It starts really fucking silly.
Yep.
And it's hard to get used to. It's more goofy than early Fallout games.
Yeah.
It is a divergent path that stayed less high tech and more just silly and pop culture-y.
Mm-hmm.
And more explicit comedy beats. There are some comedy voices. Mm-hmm. They disappear, but early on there are.
Yeah.
And it's a real opening salvo. Like the beginning of this game, I had that sinking feeling of like, oh, fuck, I'm going to have to listen to these Dorsey accents for this entire game. Are you kidding me? It goes away.
Yeah.
You know, that chills. And by once you get kind of enamored with it, you end up with the scene. I don't want to spoil it in case anyone's doing this vicariously, but where they use Land of Confusion and it works.
Yeah.
That faction works and it shouldn't. It like is actually funny. Like I've gotten in the water and it was too cold at first and now I'm used to it.
Yeah. Yeah. To me, like the shit you can do that is funny works way better than like the comedy, you know, lines than like the written stuff. Right? Yeah. And you can do some very funny shit. You know, see earlier when we were laughing about the sending an entire Petco at somebody, right?
Yeah. And the guy, Provost, like guys who just, there's a lot of surreality to this. Yeah. Mm-hmm. What's interesting is they take some of those elements and treat them really seriously.
Yeah.
We talked about the Monster Mash. That is a faction in this. Mm-hmm. They're taking serious people with dignity. Yep. You know, like they're a faction you can care about. You meet the leader and he's really charismatic and charming, even though he's a fat guy in a Dracula mask.
Yeah.
Like it's real silly, but they don't think it's silly because they're doing that cargo cult thing.
Yeah.
They're taking these relics from the old world and they don't understand their context that we have from them.
Right. They see the transformative qualities of the costumes and just of the universal horror stories and see that as a positive and affirming message for how to comport yourself when there are no rules. Right.
It's a major theme. It's the same thing they're doing with the pop songs.
Yes.
Like if you do not know the context of Welcome Back, Kotter, it's a really sad song. Mm-hmm. If you don't know the context of a scary werewolf mask, like you could understand a gang in the future using those as their calling card.
Yeah.
Smarter than it initially seems, I think is like how I will call it, you know, the tone stuff.
It works on multiple levels, dumb and not so dumb.
Yeah. but starts dumb.
Yeah.
You know, and then it reveals the not so dumb. Mm-hmm. The actual story of this, the grand plot is good.
Yes.
The patriarch is really cool. The characters in this are really pretty well developed. Mm-hmm. How you're resolving this family conflict is really good.
Mm-hmm.
And what you're ultimately doing in terms of deciding the fate for Colorado, but then also your friends, your family back home is a good and interesting choice.
Yeah.
And the way this resolves is good.
Yes. Way into it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Let's talk about the series. This is the first Wasteland we've done.
It is.
Probably the last Wasteland.
Probably, yeah.
Yeah, like Wasteland 2 is cool, but it's not as good. This is a better version of it. Mm-hmm. Wasteland 1 is something I keep wanting to actually push myself through, and I struggle with it.
I'll
talk about that.
Just because of its heritage, and also the fact that it's what if you had the scintillating and completely intuitive combination of Ultima and the Bard's Tale?
Yes, yeah, it's a blobber Ultima. That started in 1986. Director Brian Fargo. Wanting to raise the profile of Interplay with the follow-up to The Bard's Tale that wasn't just a sequel to it.
Yeah. They didn't want to become The Bard's Tale studio.
And they did a post-apocalyptic setting, which is something right now is cliche. Mm-hmm. At the time was really fresh.
Well, it's cliche in games because of this.
Yes. Yeah, because of, exactly. Like at the time, doing a RPG that wasn't a fantasy thing or a straight sci-fi thing was very rare.
Yes.
He loved Mad Max.
Yeah.
And he wanted to explore mechanics that wouldn't make sense in a medieval fantasy game, but might make sense in Mad Max.
Yeah. Something, you know, so I've not looked too deeply into the original, Wasteland. Something that really differentiates this from what would come later, you know, with Fallout and stuff like that is it is entirely about fighting robots.
Yes.
Like that is the main threat in the first two in the first two Wasteland games, is my understanding. You are dealing with out of control AIs and like robots and synths that have lost their mind.
It's more technology general anxiety than nuclear anxiety.
Yeah.
You know, specifically.
Mm-hmm.
Big hit, did really well. Also still critically liked Wasteland 1. It shows up on the list of the best CRPGs of the 80s all the time. Mm-hmm. Immediately had a couple of follow-ups that came out.
Yeah. I was completely unaware of these. Basically, they're like, okay, people like Wasteland. We need something like it to, you know, kind of feed the fire here. They had two spiritual successors, one of which came out and was initially sold as a follow-up called Fountain of Dreams. Came out in 1990. Takes place in a post-apocalyptic Florida. This was sold as a sequel to Wasteland, despite having none of the personnel on the team. And it remained that way until like the early 2000s when they're like, yeah, that has nothing to do with Wasteland. Yeah,
we lied.
Yeah.
Yeah. Sorry. There was also a spiritual successor, Meantime, which got canceled. It's famous vaporware. You know, was very far into development. The staff started leaving and Brian Fargo said, fuck it, dump it.
Yeah.
Meantime seemed like it was going to be interesting. You can read about Meantime.
Yes.
Online.
Yeah.
The biggest impact Wasteland had on gaming generally is that it inspired Fallout.
Yeah.
Very obviously inspired Fallout. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of commonalities, so much so that the people who made Fallout were doing tons of homages.
Yes.
To it. Like the, in Fallout 1 and 2, the crit message where you say, they became a thin red mist.
Yeah.
It's a direct kill quote from Wasteland from 1986.
Yes. Huge commonalities, but had its own identity, and they, you know, diverged. Mm-hmm. Like, basically all of modern Fallout happens, between Wasteland 1 and 2.
Yes.
Wasteland 2 very specifically was the throwback.
Yeah, to kind of come back after Bethesda'd up.
Yes.
You know, even if somebody likes, you know, Fallout 3 and 4, just fine.
Different things.
They're different. Yeah, very different.
Yeah. Interplay could not do anything with the Wasteland name, specifically because they didn't own it. I think this is why Fallout is a Fallout game and not a Wasteland game. One of the reasons, anyway. The rights belonged to Electronic Arts until Brian Fargo reacquired them in 2003 at his new studio, In Exile, which is a good studio that has made good games. Their first decade of existence is real rough, including the fact that the first game they put out was the 2004 Bard's Tale.
Ah, yes. The comedy Bard's Tale.
Yeah.
The what if a bard, this game presupposes what if a bard was sexist and horny?
Yeah.
Can you imagine? As opposed to Dandelion, who's just horny.
Yeah.
The Wasteland's revival wouldn't have happened without Kickstarter. This was a really early thing in the Kickstarter boom. Me and Nick Glauber, early Kickstarter backers of this. I remember bonding with Nick about being excited with this.
Oh, dang.
You know, just like, holy shit, look at this there. And this was inspired by the success of Double Fine Adventure.
Yes.
So like, hey, we can do this. Mm-hmm. Wasteland 2's initial goal was $900,000, which was the highest goal on Kickstarter at the time, and it funded within 4 days. There was a thirst for this.
Yes. Brian Fargo did not end up having to put in the $100,000 of his own money to make this happen. And the sequel was a big reunion of old Interplay folks. A lot of the original developers on the first game, and then some Planescape Torment staff. You had Colin McComb, Chris Avalon hopped onto it. And then they brought back Mark Morgan from Torment and Fallout to compose the score.
Yeah.
For two. Yeah.
Wasteland 2 got good reviews. It released in 2014. Fans complained about it feeling unfinished, and there weren't a lot of quality of life features. I played Wasteland 2. I think there might be a Check It Out Comrade on it. It is good. It is balls hard.
Yeah.
And it takes a little while to start getting interesting choices. It begins with a lot of back to basics stuff. It feels like it holds your hand for too long. You eventually get to a town that has an interesting moral dilemma and it starts feeling like itself.
Yeah.
It takes a little bit though.
Yeah.
If you are still thirsty for this, it is kind of worth playing, but I do feel like Wasteland 3 blows it out of the water.
Yeah.
So
makes sense. I don't feel a lot of compulsion to go back.
Yeah.
Like, and the sequels are so close together too. Like, you get recurring characters between these.
Yes.
Yeah.
It's also don't feel like you need to know the story. You can ask characters about it in this.
Mm-hmm.
You get most of it through context clues. So there are references to what happened in Wasteland 2. It is important, but you don't need it.
Yes. I pulled some of the development details for Wasteland 3 specifically from interviews on GameGrin.com and RedBull.com.
A pair of great websites.
Oh man, Game the best.
I love when I sit down and have my Game Grin.
Uh-huh.
When I'm considering doing some gaming, I first get the Game Grin, and that's how I get real ready to game.
Oh, you get the grin going and you can do anything.
Yeah. Was the grin there?
So this was announced in 2016, a less star-studded development team than the Wasteland 2, mostly made up of people who did Torment Tides of Numenera.
Yeah. Funded on Fig, which is a crowdfunding site that let backers have equity in the game. It raised more than $3 million.
Yep.
And the extra budget funded a change in scope.
Yeah.
This is why this is a much longer game. It is relatively shorter than it could be, you know, 50, 60 hours. This is offset by it being much more polished.
Yes.
Voice acting, there's visual polish in this.
Yeah. So they moved to Colorado. Like, they saw it as a way to onboard new players. Like, you and the Rangers are not established. You know, you are walking into a strange and already established situation that doesn't require an awful lot of previous knowledge. You're starting from zero. Additionally, they were like, oh, well, Colorado, not a lot of games set there, not a lot of post-apocalyptic games set in winter, and also way more preppers up there.
Yeah. Yeah. What would that be like?
Yeah.
You know, they also, that change in aesthetics that we talked about, that was so important, that was very intentional.
Yes.
Let's try snow. A struggle for the team on Wasteland 2 and 3 was watching players struggle with this kind of old style of character creation, doing it for the whole party. That is very old school.
Yeah.
It's a thing I love. Mm-hmm. In this, but I can imagine kind of scaring people off.
Yeah. And we alluded to, like, it still is a little bit prickly because you are making a lot of decisions before you know the full scope of the game.
Yes.
before you know what is going to be valuable, or before you know, like, how party composition is going to work.
Right. They should have made the first 5 respecs free.
Yes.
And I feel like this wouldn't be a problem, but.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Midway through development, Xbox Game Studios acquired InXile, something that has worked out great for everybody that happened to.
Yeah. It's the kiss of life.
Yeah. It gave them extra staff and resources, but the game was still delayed a little bit because of the COVID-19 pandemic. They had to shift to working from home. And that was an adjustment period.
Yeah. Released to better reviews than Wasteland 2. Garnered a lot of award nominations. This is a well-liked game.
Mm-hmm.
There are 2 pieces of DLC. These were released in 2021 that we won't be talking about very much.
Yeah.
The Battle of Steeltown and the Cult of the Holy Detonation. I played both of these when I first played the game. Mm-hmm. The thing that makes them harder to talk about and not that appealing is that they basically both take place in like one big mega dungeon. Not the same one. But rather than kind of moving around the world and doing things, you go to a big town.
Yeah.
And kind of do, they're kind of claustrophobic. And the power curve is not equipped to go beyond the end game of this game.
Mm-hmm.
By the end of this game, you are pretty maxed out and your build is set and you can take on almost anything. Adding threats and adding verbs for yourself are something that I feel like are kind of inelegant.
Yeah.
There's cool story things about that. The Battle of Steeltown specifically is like a labor story. Mm-hmm. It's neat, but it's not essential, I would say.
Right. Yeah. When we come across like the NPC or whatever, who will send you that way, we'll, you know, talk about them a little bit, like what that, what is accomplished there. And those do give you different options for the endings as well. Yeah.
Yeah.
We don't know what is going to happen with Wasteland in the future. This did well. InXile is currently working on a game that looks kind of neat. Clockwork Revolution. It looks like a first-person shooter role-playing game, M-Sim-esque kind of deal in a steampunk setting. The trailers and stuff that I have seen look neat, look way more action-y than anything that InXile has done, which is, I think, going to be it's interesting. I'm curious to see if they can pull it off.
I'm looking forward to hearing the sad covers of Professor Colonialism and his cosmic clock. And all of the great steampunk bands that we all love.
Yeah.
But just a sad cover of, you know, It Is Whatnot.
Mm-hmm.
And like Rudyard Kipling's Lament. All these like beautiful Professor Colonialism and his Cosmic Clock songs.
Just a really good like Zydeco performance of the King of Queens theme song.
This ain't fucking Toontown. Yeah, so we're going to get into it. We're just going to kind of cover the opening moments of the game because we've been going for a while and get in kind of more of the story.
Yes.
Later. We have an opening cutscene. It lays out the setup. The Rangers are driving through the snow across a frozen lake and they're ambushed by some raiders with rocket launchers.
Yeah. And this is a slaughter. We get some tutorial battles showing us the ins and outs as we're fighting the people who ambushed us, the Dorsey clan. Which are just straight up deliverance hillbillies.
Yes. They're rough. They have, they sound like Cletus, relatives.
Mm-hmm.
Like they sound like, Geech gone into heaven, Mr. Terwilliger.
Yeah.
They all sound like that.
Yes.
It's really intense. They say stupid things.
Mm-hmm.
All they do is just say like, we're going to bathe in your blood. It sucks.
Yeah.
They have a religion about the great deluge. Which is creating this, basically blood sacrifice shit.
Yes.
some stuff happens with the Dorseys where you learn about them that is a little bit more interesting. Mm-hmm. But initially, it just seems like you're going to fight hillbillies.
Yeah, you're just
a little bit rough.
Blasted full force with that accent for a while.
Yes. Yeah. Very exaggerated version of it. Mm-hmm. Our commander, Major Vera Prasad, tells us to find a way up into the dam where the rockets are coming from to kind of stop the slaughter. And we do a series of tutorials, basically, on our way up here. There's a stealth tutorial, you know, getting the drop on people, things like that. One where we see a hostage situation. There's Private Jody Bell, and she has a kidnapper who you can, you know, snipe or you can talk to. You can kill her kidnapper or you can let her kidnapper go.
Yeah.
And you don't want to let her go.
Nope. This is where I learned the lesson, Gary. Because
the game is trying to say don't do the thing that usually you put points in the good bucket.
Yes. In games. Yeah. Because if you let her go, she warns the people in the next encounter and it's harder.
Yeah.
You can't get the drop on them. Yeah.
That's what she would do. Uh-huh. You know, I love it when games do something like a character acts in a way that makes sense.
Yes.
Like put it in my veins.
You want to save Jody Bell. It takes a while for her to get healthy enough to join you. She is she comes out of the box as an incredibly good sniper.
Yeah. Yep. If you don't have a sniper, who did you roll with? I guess we should say that. Who are your two created characters? We didn't mention this. You can choose characters that do have a story.
Yes.
There are sets of pairs of characters that you can choose in the beginning. I can't imagine doing it.
No, no.
Yeah. I mean, they look fine, but not that interesting to me.
Yeah. I didn't take one of the kits, you know, like the, mother and daughter one or whatever. I did myself, with small arms and nerd shit. I did my brother as like melee and barter.
Right on. Yeah. I did me and Liv, me as leader pistols and Liv as a sniper.
Okay.
And me as pistols, leadership, medic, basically.
Mm-hmm.
You get, there are actually unique lines that you'll get if you choose the story characters.
Mm-hmm.
Apparently it's pretty underdeveloped.
Yeah.
They don't have like loyalty quest or background quest or anything like that. They just have personalities, which I did not want.
Yeah. I did those two. And when I got the ability to make, you know, to make people, I like, took some of the pre-made, ones, like Doc Nails, like heavy weapons and medic, I forget the other one. Yeah. I just used some of the pre-mades and then customized them.
Yeah. I ended up making new guys from that from scratch. You get, those two extra slots are very useful to fill out holes. You have to kind of, when you're making guys, you have to look at what skills go together as well.
Yeah.
You know, heavy weapons or like sniper medic, you know, your sniper is going to hang back.
Yeah.
You know, but it takes a lot of AP to snipe. So it like seems initially like it might make sense, but it's kind of difficult.
Yeah.
You know, you have to kind of figure out what roles and if they work together.
Yes. Yeah. But you want to save Jody. And you do not want to let her captor go. It is very stupid to do that.
Yeah. Up on the dam, we find the guy shooting rocket launchers. This is Jarrett Dorsey. You get a dialogue thing. This is teaching us about using dialogue to influence things. You get him riled up. You're talking about his knife is in real shitty shape. And you seems like you're going to get into a fight, but Vera sniped him.
His head just explodes
during the conversation.
I didn't realize you were going to take knife jabs so personally.
Yeah. That's a knife. And we get our big climactic battle to the tutorial. This is our first set piece music thing. They play Bathed in the Blood of the Lamb, old religious hymn.
Mm-hmm.
And it's great.
Yeah.
You know, like first time it pops up, it feels like it's batting above its waist class for tone.
Yeah. And like, it's not just the cover, it is the quality of the recording as well. Yes. Like it has some of that like warped vinyl, like wobble to it as well.
Sounds great.
Yeah. It sounds like ghostly almost. Yeah. It's so good.
Yeah.
And this is really explosive. Like the top of the dam is loaded with oil barrels. You have another guy with a rocket launcher, who is going to teach you not to stay bunched up.
Mm-hmm.
And then some reinforcements show up a couple of turns in, kind of like from a different angle. It's pretty
cool. Yeah.
Intricate for a tutorial battle.
It's intricate. It's teaching you something about, battle layout in that you are on the back foot, you are on low ground, and have fewer opportunities for cover than the people you're attacking. That's going to continue to happen. A lot of times the people you're going to fight in this are expecting a fight, and that's teaching you to search for advantages.
Yes.
You know, if they're already holed up, how do I fuck that up?
Mm-hmm.
You know, after the fight, Prasad is mortally injured. And she gives us our orders. We had to get to Colorado Springs, set up a base, and we're doing a job for the Patriarch to save the Arizona Rangers. Things are bad for the Rangers. Mm-hmm. They do not have food.
Yeah.
They already sent an advance team, General Woodson, led by Angela Death, who is a character mascot.
Mm-hmm.
As in all three of the games, sent her, and they went dark. You know what happened to them, and they're not sending back that food, and Arizona needs the food.
Yeah. As far as you know right now, you are the only two people who survived from the party. So you're starting from nothing.
Yeah.
I do inherit a cat. It is a cat with a cowboy hat named Major Tomcat. I get him to join by offering him cigarettes.
Yeah. He loves to smoke.
Yeah.
You can get him as your first kind of companion. Again, hard to keep alive.
Yes.
Also, Erastus, Jared's older brother, swears vengeance on us. Nobody spills Dorsey blood. This pays off in a real wet fart later.
Yeah,
I'm going to spill Dorsey blood, man.
Yeah, it's fine. I can do it all the time. Yeah. In fact, by volume, I think that's the most blood that I spill.
I might do it right now.
Yeah. But he radios you and swears vengeance. And you climb in your vehicle and go to Colorado Springs to an actual Air Force base that has been repurposed for you. Mm-hmm. You meet the Patriarch. He's this stern guy named Saul Buchanan, pretty old. And he owns Colorado. And the Dorseys attacked his city at the same time that they ambushed us. He even apologizes. He says, like, we knew that they were going, but we had to prioritize, like, protecting the city. So, like, he's going to give us more resources. He'll help us recruit, kind of in recompense for that.
And you end up with this kind of sub, it's not even a game. It's hard to call it a base building
mm-hmm.
thing. But the initial quest of this, getting the Rangers up and running, is really satisfying.
Yes.
You get there, he mentions some people to talk to. And you talk to these lieutenants, and they say, like, you know, eventually you're going to start staffing this place. And there are choices involved in that. But there's an alarm going off.
Yeah.
They're like, you know, I can't hear myself think. You have to turn that off.
No.
We go into kind of the command room, and there are little robots that make a very cute robot noise.
Mm-hmm. They talk. I like minions. They stutter in a way where they replace ends with bees and stuff. It's really degraded.
Like electric minions, though. Like imagine a computer minion.
Yeah.
Imagine a bonsai buddy. Imagine a bonsai buddy.
I use my sneaky shit skill to lie about being IT, which lets me register on the main computer, and the alarm stops. That's how I resolve this.
There are a bunch of different ways to do this. If they ask if you have authority, and you can be like, we're the Rangers, which are remnants of the army, and that's mm-hmm. good enough as well.
Yeah.
If you fail this, you have to fight them.
Yeah.
We do this. Saul comes in and tells us basically our mission. He's got three shit kids, Liberty, Victory, and Valor.
Yes.
And all three are trying to overthrow him. So he brought us to Colorado because he has divided loyalty, and Colorado has divided loyalty.
Yes.
He doesn't want to kill his kids, and any of those kids, people, they have followers.
Yeah.
And interestingly, he says, you can say, like, oh, you want us to kill your kids? He's like, no, these are my fucking children.
Yeah.
I need you to capture them alive.
Yeah. If they die, there are going to be problems, he says. Yeah. And they're laid out in the order that we're going to go get them, based on the difficulty. And we're at level 1 or 2 right now. The highest one is, like, you have to be like level 19 to go get them, as recommended. So this is going to span the entire game. The easiest one to get is kind of the more fail son of the three. Mm-hmm. There's Valor, who is codenamed the Zealot. He is an arrogant computer nerd. Who fucked up so bad that he got sent to Denver to be an ambassador to the Gippers. I love the Gippers. We're going to feast on the Gippers.
God, I love the Gippers. By that point, I'd fully been infected.
Yeah.
By all of the tone stuff. I was like, this is great. Mm-hmm. Victor the Psychopath, he was sent to an asylum, but he got out and he assembled his own gang in Aspen. We're going to talk about him eventually. But the biggest threat is Liberty, the traitor. This is his daughter. She's the smartest and most dangerous of all, and she's putting together a coup.
Yeah.
She's gathering gangs to do a coup in Colorado Springs.
Yes. The one who is going to be most effective if she is allowed to make her press. And you're left to explore the base. You poke around, and one of the first major decisions that you have to make is when you go into the barracks and you find that there are people living there. You have some squatters, refugees who came in specifically from the east. These are people from the plains who are fleeing warlords.
Yes.
Primarily what's happening. That kind of ever-present threat on the east is one of the main kind of like organizing factors for why the patriarch feels like he is necessary.
Yeah. For the argument of that.
Yes. Yeah.
And this is your first big moral choice. Mm-hmm. You know, are you going to allow them to stay in your base? Mm-hmm. You're going to kick them out. The Colorado Springs is having a refugee crisis. They're not holding people up. You know, mm-hmm. people are living in the streets. Do you send them there or do you let them stay here? I was doing this as a patriarch playthrough, I did not let them stay. Mm-hmm. This, like all the choices in this, has effects on the end game.
Yeah.
There's not necessarily an easy, obvious right choice depending on what end game you're going for.
And this situation evolves over the course of the game as well. I decided to let them stay. I was like, all right, well, you were here first. As long as you don't get in the way and if you help out. Then you can stay. That is not tenable forever.
Yes. Yep. Eventually you're going to need your space for your guys.
Mm-hmm.
The prison here. Oh, go ahead. Sorry.
The refugee thing, if you decide to let them stay, that is your introduction to the reputation system.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. That faction, within the town, there's kind of a grand faction system for things outside of the town and then multiple different sects inside Colorado Springs.
Right.
You go check out the prison. This has a creepy guy who's been locked up there for years eating mushrooms.
Mm-hmm. Living on mushrooms and rat squeezins.
Yeah, rat squeezins and mushrooms. Squeezins is a big noun in this game. There's evidence he poisoned another guy who was there.
Tricked him into eating a mushroom he knew would kill him.
This is, if you let him out, this is Law Truck.
Yep.
He Law Trucks your base.
Very clearly. He's like, yeah. He's just like, hey, do you want us to let you out? It's like, I wouldn't.
Yeah. Well, but the interesting thing is when you get a warden for their prison, she will call you up and be like, hey, can we let this guy out? Like, he's really annoying and he's been here forever. I think he's been punished enough.
Yeah.
Like, you're going to have characters around you that make the wrong call.
Uh-huh.
Because an NPC says something does not mean it is true.
Right. He's also a vendor. Like, you can buy poison items from him.
Yeah, they're different mushrooms and everything. He'll give you a mushroom for free that just poisons you. You should not eat the mushroom. You got it from a guy in a cage. So we have to upgrade our forces and we have to assemble a working base.
Yes.
Saul gives us, however, with this attack that just happened in Colorado Springs, there are fires to put out.
Yes.
And Saul says, hey, there's some Dorseys holed up in the Garden of the Gods of this area we can go to kind of get our vengeance and stop that attack from happening again.
Mm-hmm. And we go down to Colorado Springs to get introduced to our first hub area here. Colorado Springs has problems, scary.
Yeah, not a great town. Mm-hmm. It also has a bumpin' club.
Yeah.
A really catchy song. Because they just got attacked. So the power's out. There are thieves picking over these dead marshals here. We go through, we do little encounters. We learn about things. If you take Marshal Kwan with you, who is the kind of intro character, he knows people here.
Mm-hmm.
He used to be he used to be a marshal.
He used to be a marshal, and he left to join the Rangers to kind of like be a local guide character. He's good.
Kind
he's
of
like
an ass- pawns.
Yeah, he's like an assault rifle guy. Who's pretty effective at that. I still have him around. I might eventually sub him out because his story stuff is very clearly over as we're leaving. As I'm not sticking around Colorado Springs very much.
Yeah. I didn't like his voice, the delivery and stuff. It reminded me too much of Preston Garvey.
Yeah.
So once I could, I dumped.
Yeah.
Dumped him.
He's the Alistair, right?
Yes. Yeah. Very much so in Dragon Age terms.
Yeah.
One of the interesting world building things here is you come across an execution. The judge magistrate is here, overseeing the pillories. In Colorado Springs, there's just one penalty.
Mm-hmm.
For anything, and it's being sentenced to death or limb loss, because mm-hmm. it's a minor crime, to exposure. They take off your clothes, they put you in the pillories, and it is way too cold out.
Way too cold. It is a public spectacle.
Yes.
It's rough. And this is your first kind of glimpse at the Iron Hand that the patriarch kind of rules with.
Yes. As we're there, a mom will beg you to help her son get free because Austin Pease, her son, just took some food from the Dorseys in exchange for breaking some windows.
Yeah.
barely did anything. Mm-hmm. You can go argue to the magistrate and get him released as a ranger, mm-hmm. which I did. I wanted more, I was playing as kind of a shithead character, but I wanted people.
Yeah, you could use them, right?
Yeah,
it's like, okay, well, if I'm going to be held responsible for you, you're going to carry your weight.
Yeah. There's a little minor encounters. Some Dorseys are holed up in a clothing store. You can clear them out. If we do this, we have a discount there. There's a garage just outside the city gates. Mm-hmm. And we get introduced a minor faction in this, the Arapaho, by Jimmy Longhall. These are the kind of truckers, the mm-hmm. mechanics of this.
Yeah. Yeah, like they stayed out of the whole conflict over setting up civilization again. And mm-hmm. they specialized to be like logistics people, mechanics and couriers.
Yeah. Solid bros. Mm-hmm. They have a doctor working out of their garage, and he is in emergency mode. We can talk mm-hmm. to him, and he's like, "I don't have time for this. I'm patching up people who are going to die. And if you offer to help, you can do so, and he will offer his service as a doctor."
Yes.
There's a woman with a bullet in her brain, and he needs a better space. And he's like, "I will do work for you in exchange for letting me use your lab."
Yes. I think that's good.
Doctors, there's a couple of people you can get multiple different characters to run the part mm-hmm. of this. I don't think it's true for the doctor.
You can replace your doctor later on, I believe, with one of the bots from the airport.
Oh, interesting. Yeah, yeah. I didn't get that option.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He is there. Doctors are good. They give you a free, he will give you free healing at the base. Even out in the world, healing, the most I've seen it cost is like $25.
Yeah,
that's cheap. For a complete heal and getting rid of all of your injuries.
Yeah. We didn't mention this. There's not a rest system in this, and you don't heal after battles.
Right.
Naturally or anything like that. So you do need to use consumables or find a doctor.
Mm-hmm. The Marshall Station is completely overwhelmed, obviously, in the wake of this attack. And we get a story NPC here. A young woman named Lucia Wesson is at the front desk asking for help recovering her family, who was captured by the Dorseys, and they can't offer any support. Like you can even like point out, like, okay, why should they stop trying to save other people to save your family, right?
Yeah. And she, there's her family. This is a microcosm. Of what's happening in the game, I think very intentionally.
Yeah.
You are asking people with fires to put out to save your family.
Mm-hmm.
Sheriff Daisy says, listen, if you care so much, you do it. There are people in the Gardens of the Gods. This is the same people that the Patriarch told us about. And take Lucio along with you. Get her out of my hair. So we have our two, extra party members now. We have a full party.
Yes.
And we see this other kind of area of the town, Garden of the mm-hmm. Gods.
Yeah. Lucia is a gunslinger. She comes with a really good revolver, specced out for small arms. Sheriff Daisy herself, something if you're trying to reputation max in this, mm-hmm. As you go and do quests, not so much this next one, but like if you're doing a quest for a faction, as you learn new things, you can go back to the leader. Like you can come back to Sheriff Daisy and say, hey, I learned this. Need to report. How should we proceed? That gains you extra faction. Making those stops helps.
Yeah. For the most of the factions are diametrically opposed.
Yeah.
You can't gain without gaining. You can't gain without losing with another. Mm-hmm. Most of the time. But if you want, one of the things the Golden Ending relies on is getting a couple of different specific reputations maxed out.
Yes.
So the Garden of the Gods is the wealthy area of town where the 100 families, these are the people who originally came here,
mm-hmm.
Are there. And this is, this grows the food. This is the wealthy section. We've been seeing refugees and public executions. This is where people live the good life.
That's Broadmoor is where the good life is.
Oh, you're right.
The Garden of the Gods
is where they grow their food, where the Broadmoor people grow their food.
Yeah, yeah. It's like a park that has been repurposed with like mega science.
You're right.
This is where you get the this is where you get the solar collectors that you can use nerd shit to retrofit into being a beam weapon.
Correct. Yeah, I got them confused. So the Dorseys have holed up here and they have a bunch of hostages.
Yeah.
We get here, the first person we meet is a scientist named Bellamy Ward, and the Dorseys have him pinned.
Yeah.
He's up high, he's not really in danger, and there's a lot of cover. The Dorseys are just facing him.
Yeah.
This, I think, is the game saying, wouldn't it be fun to shoot these guys in the back? Do you really want to talk to these assholes? Like, you saw them wipe out your entire convoy.
Mm-hmm.
Do they have anything worth saying, or do you just want to shoot them while they're not looking at you?
Yeah, like they're literally like they're pressed up against a wall and you have all this cover.
Like, yeah. I think this is one of the things I like about this game is that the early encounter spaces, just from encounter design and level design, communicate a lot.
Yeah.
About how you're supposed to be playing the game.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So this can just be shooting fish in a barrel and you rescue this guy and he gives you some tips about those collectors. The second encounter is against a Dorsey Beastmaster, and we get our first mutant animals here, these spike hounds, like wolverines that can shoot spines at you.
Yeah.
They're
hard. Like animals in this are generally tough. Mm-hmm. Mutant animals tend to be tougher than humans.
Yeah. They start showing up with natural armor well before you get to heavily armored human enemies.
Yeah.
Is a big deal with that.
There is a way to get kind of behind the encounter, kind mm-hmm. of bypass it. You have to go through a side path, but there are waste wolves you have to fight. If you get there, you can mess with a solar energy collector and turn it into a beam to non-standard kill these guys.
Yeah.
Here. You have to be looking out for that little side path. Otherwise, you just end up fighting them.
It's a spot check. Your perception determines whether or not you see traps, but also like, oh, that's a fake wall, or this can turn into a secret passage or something like that. I found the secret passage from the back I did. And I was like, oh, that would be super neat if I could have gone there and gotten around that.
I have not spec'd enough.
Nope.
Yeah. And we get our big moral choice at the end of this. We reach a campsite where the kids of the 100 family are holed up. They surrender immediately.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of weird. Like, why? Yeah, I thought you were hostages.
Yeah.
Turns out they're led by somebody named Isaac Reed, who took an offer from the Dorseys to collaborate on taking down the Patriarch with help of Farron Brygo's gang, little fun Brian Fargo thing.
Yeah. Another recurring character from the first two games.
Yeah. And so we have this choice. We just saw what they did.
Uh-huh.
Downtown is full. It's got street corpses.
Yeah.
You know, it's got 10% new Londo'd.
Yeah.
in terms of what the walking area is like. And these people helped.
Mm-hmm.
They want to take down the Patriarch. And at this point in the game, we do not have any information that the Patriarch is no good.
Right. We saw the pillories, but that's it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He's run by this idealist and he says, listen, the society run by one person is wrong.
Mm-hmm.
You know? But when he did this betrayal, he betrayed Lucia's family and there's, you know, he loves her. There's like a Romeo and Juliet thing.
Yeah. It was like, oh, I'll betray your family. So you will live, and we can run off together, which is a really fucked up romantic gesture.
Yeah. So he gave her the warning of the attack. She just left. She didn't know. And her family got caught. She has no more family. She's an orphan. We can find them burning in a corpse pit.
Yeah. You pass a corpse pit on the way here. And he's like, yeah, they're probably in there.
Yeah. And this is later confirmed. Her family didn't make it.
Yeah.
Lucia's pissed.
Yes.
She wants blood. The Dorsey family member who led the attack, Nellius Dorsey, escaped out into the plains, where he says that Liberty Buchanan is putting together an army to sack Colorado Springs. So we're going to find out how Liberty is kind of uniting the gangs.
Yes.
Is the idea.
Yeah. And you have to decide what to do with Reed. You can kill him. You can put him into martial custody, which is the same as a death penalty. Or you can take him into ranger custody. You can throw him in your brig.
Yep. I killed him for this because, again, I'm trying to experiment with doing this evil. And it's really great. Previously, I'd done ranger custody because it's the good thing to do.
Mm-hmm.
If you take him into custody, Lucia gets upset, like really mad that you did that, and then cools down. If you shoot him, it's the opposite.
Yeah.
She's real into it and then starts thinking, like, I didn't know it was going to be like that.
Yeah.
You also have to kill all of his friends.
Mm-hmm.
If you kill him, they all start an attack and they're real weak.
Mm-hmm.
It is ludically making you feel bad for doing something shitty.
Yeah. I took them into ranger custody. This pisses off the marshals really bad.
Yeah. So you're making a choice between your ethics, which are expensive, you know, your companion approval ratings and this faction.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. So you go back to Sheriff Daisy. And she says, like, hey, I don't like that you took him into your own custody. I'm going to reward you. I can give you this connection. You need somebody to run your jail. Here's one of our wardens, Hope Emerson, who can go. She's the one who tells you to let out the crazy old guy.
Mushroom man.
Yeah.
You mentioned the detail, like, hey, Brygo was involved. And she's like, that little fuck.
Mm-hmm.
Go to his club, Little Vegas. One of our enforcers went there and he never came back.
Yes.
So that's suspicious. I've been looking for an excuse to take this guy down forever.
Yeah.
Go do it. And these are kind of, they're not tutorial, but these are your like Green Hill Zone quests before you leave.
Yeah.
You know, the thing you're going to do this whole quest chain.
Yes.
before you leave.
And we will do that next week.
Yeah, well, we're going to cut it. Yeah, thanks for listening. We appreciate you. If you are hearing this and you have a project or product and you're any kind of disenfranchised person, send me an email at gary@duckfeed.tv. We'd be happy to shout you out. Just include any information I might want. So pronunciation, pronouns, and like a link.
Yes, link is important. If you have thoughts on Wasteland 3, the deadline is December the 15th. Go ahead and write in at duckfeed.tv/contact. We like responses that are specific and concise, if you can. And if you have thoughts about January's games, which are, we are doing a rerun of an episode about The Legend of Zelda that we did on Bonfireside Chat. That's how we're opening up the year. The next episode is going to be about The Binding of Isaac. That's going to be a guest episode between Gary and Will.
Mm-hmm. And I can't remember what the third one is.
The third one is Thief 2, The Metal Age.
Oh, yeah, it's mine. Yeah, I couldn't remember the order we landed on. Yeah, that's going to be fun. One cool thing about doing that rerun is we didn't get a chance to read Legend of Zelda responses.
Yes, please write in about the original Legend of Zelda.
Yeah, I imagine you have thoughts. Mm-hmm. And kind of an important game, like C-, mm-hmm. kind of important though.
Yeah.
Yeah, just
footnote, really. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, a minor saint.
And then the premium game for January is going to be RoboCop Rogue City.
Yes. Rogo wants an Oreo.
An Orgio.
If you want to get that the premium episode for this month and next month, so if you want to get RoboCop, and this month we're running our live panel from Portland Retro Gaming Expo, become a patron. Patreon.com/DuckFeedTV. $5 a month gives you tons of stuff, bunch of extra shows, bonus content on this show, unimaginable riches can be yours. It is a lot of content, and you get the backlogs as well.
Yes. Yeah. That does make a big difference for us. Remember, we have DuckStream coming up.
Oh yeah.
December the 12th through the 14th, 48 hours of, streaming games and other stuff, to raise money for Point of Pride, an organization that provides, direct assistance to trans people who need life-saving medical care.
Yeah. We would appreciate it. We always say, if you can't give a signal boost, I'm going to say, and signal boost.
Yeah, do both.
Even if you can give, do it. Same thing if you can patronize. Even if you can patronize us, why not give us a rating or review as well?
Yeah.
I don't know. You can multitask. Yeah. It helps. Talk about us on forums and stuff. We don't advertise. Yeah. We don't put advertisements in the show as well. So we're supported through that Patreon. Mm-hmm. The reason why you don't hear ads is because of that. The reason why you don't see ads for us everywhere is because we rely on you.
Yes.
Yeah,
rating, reviews, comments on Spotify. Try not to look at those. Try not to look at anything.
Yeah,
people write. Lots of people being shitty about me there.
Yeah.
So balance out the chi. Yeah.
Yeah. It's good not to look at that stuff, but we know it helps in some way.
Yeah.
If you do it, it's not because we see it.
Yes.
Because we've learned a lesson. It took a long time, but we got there.
It's not for us.
Yeah. It's not for us. It's for other people to check and see if like, oh man, like, you know, does this show, do transphobes like this or not?
Yeah.
Nor a biggest indicator of quality of a podcast about video games where they talk about that stuff for maybe fucking half a percentage of the time.
Yep.
And you can also join us in thanking our producer, Gwen. Big thanks to Gwen. Mm-hmm. Until next time, what should they watch out for?
Watch out for the Dorseys.